While certainly filled with a history of talent, creativity, and even innovation, there was a span of time when Hollywood was seen as something more than simply a motion picture factory. An attempt was made to take it over and convert it into a tool to promote communism. My next guest with his new book takes you back to those years, presents the details of those who embraced communism, the steps they took to inject their message into America, and who fought to stop them. His book is Hollywood Traitors, Blacklisted Screenwriters, Agents of Stalin, Allies of Hitler. He's the son of screenwriter Maury Riskin and editor-at-large for Human Events. We say good morning to Alan Riskin. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, how are you? Thank you very much.
And Human Events is on the web at humanevents.com. Hopefully you knew that already. Just for a refresher, the Hollywood 10 are the most notables of the communists who were in positions to, as I said, inject ideas of communism and even Nazism in some regard too into the American culture. What positions were they in, and what means did they have to attempt to do what they wanted to do?
Well, let me just back up a little bit here and talk about the Hollywood 10 anyway.
Okay.
That was in 1947. The House Committee on Un-American Activities held its first major hearings on communism in Hollywood. And they had the first part of hearings dealt with. They had friendly witnesses, people who were anti-communist, people like my dad, for instance, who testified against the communists, and Roy Brewer, who was a labor leader, and became a major anti-communist figure. But then came the next set of hearings, and these were people who, I guess, they had subpoenaed 19, 11 testified, and then the famous Hollywood 10. And each of them, this is 47, were in the midst of the Cold War, and they refused to say whether they were members of the Communist Party. And as a result of that refusal, they were cited for contempt, they went to jail, and they were blacklisted. And that's how, anyway, the blacklist began. Now, the people that were there, I mean, you have they didn't all do the communist picture that you're talking about, but many of them tried to. But Dalton Trumbull, of course, was one of the major ones. And John Howard Lawson, he actually did a number of movies like Blockade and Action in the North Atlantic. And he was head of the Communist Party in Hollywood for, maybe a dozen years or so. And he was the enforcer of the Communist Party line. I mean, and when I say communist, a lot of young people today don't really understand what that means. They'll think, oh, well, they were left-wingers or, you know, people like Michael Moore, but I'm saying something else. But these people had party cards, and they were loyal. Their loyalty was not to the United States. Their loyalty was the Soviet Union and Joseph Stalin, and they never contradicted him. And everything that certainly that John Howard Lawson did in both Blockade, he took the Spanish, the communist side in the Spanish Civil War, or the Soviet side in the Spanish Civil War, and then Action in the North Atlantic. Actually, I like the film, but it's all pro-Soviet, and the Soviets play a major role in rescuing an American merchant ship. And Dalton Trumbull, I mean, he's an interesting fellow because he tried many times to get communist propaganda into scripts, but he sort of wasn't that. Well, he personally wasn't that successful in that area, but what he did was he was an editor of The Screenwriter, which was the major publication of the Screenwriters Guild, and everyone, my dad was a famous screenwriter, and he was an anti-communist, and what happened was when you looked at the major publication, Trumbull himself was a communist, and he and Gordon Kahn, who was our next-door neighbor, they turned it into a communist propaganda organ. And they did everything they could to, you know, not only say how wonderful Stalin was and how wonderful the Soviet Union was and how wonderful all the communist writers in Hollywood were, but they also used it as a vehicle to denounce and condemn the anti-communists in Hollywood. And that's the sort of thing they were doing. And, of course, about Trumbull, I mean, I have a big... You know, there's a big sections in my book about Trumbull, and Trumbull, he was a Stalinist. He was someone who put out a book called, a couple of books really, but the major book was The Remarkable Andrew, in which he basically demonizes England and basically lets Hitler off the hook. This was during the Hitler-Stalin Pact because Hitler and Stalin had joined together and were against the West. They were for, actually, the Communist Party was for, actually, Hitler during this time, even though they pretended to be somewhat neutral, but they actually were for Hitler, and I have some evidence on that. And Trumbull was probably the biggest Hitler apologist at the time in the Remarkable Andrew. Now, that didn't, I think it became a, I mean, you, when you were asking me specifically about actually scripts that he wrote that came to the screen and were coming out with Hitlerian propaganda, I can't tell you that. All I can tell you is what he did aside from the scripts that he wrote. And he also, in 1950, when North Korea attacked South Korea, he took the side of North Korea. He did do a script. He actually did do a script and tried to get it to the screen. It failed, but it was actually saying that North Korea was fighting for its independence the way we fought for our independence when we were fought the English in 1776.
Talking with Alan Riskin, his new book, Hollywood Traitors, Blacklisted Screenwriters, Agents of Stalin, Allies of Hitler. He's also editor of larger Human Events at humanevents.com. On the web, you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And Alan, it's important to stay too, that when you say the communists that you spotlight in Hollywood Traitors, it's not just a level of ideology that these people, men and women, are trying to implement. They were looking for, if necessary, a violent overthrow of the American system.
Well, that's right. But it was ideology, I mean, in this sense, in that they did everything that Stalin wanted them to do. I mean, that's a very important point, even aside from the actual violence. But so far as the 1935 was a excuse me, I'm sorry. But the League of American Writers was formed in 1935. And many of these people, the Hollywood Ten and others, were there, and they attended it. And the purpose of this League of American Writers was actually to stir up revolution in the United States. And the point is, I have it because I have their own book on this. The communists put out a book called the American Writers Congress, and the American Writers Congress was urged to form the League of American Writers, and then the League of American Writers, when you look at it, the whole purpose is to establish a Soviet-style government and to use their writing skills as a weapon to bring down the United States and to impose a Soviet-style system on the United States. And three of these people became part of the Hollywood Ten, and they never renounced it. That was always a part of what the communists believed anyway. And Donald Ogden Stewart, who headed the League of American Writers in 37 and then 39, he has his biography or autobiography or memoir, and in there he says, well, by the way, the communists ran the League of American Writers. And, in fact, and I, too, personally believed in overthrowing the United States government by force and violence. He says it in his memoir. And Donald Ogden Stewart, you may have seen some of his movies, and The Philadelphia Story with Cary Grant, and Life with Father. And, I mean, he's a very good writer, but he actually was an active communist trying to overthrow our government and was willing to say and said in there that he would be willing to overthrow our government by force and violence. And those are the kinds of things that were going on.
Robbie, we're talking with Alan Riskin and his new book, Hollywood Traitors, Blacklisted Screenwriters, Agents of Stalin, Allies of Hitler. Alan's also editor at larger Human Events, humanevents.com on the web. Listening to Issues and Ideas, and Alan, you also help clue us into who fought against these traitors, above and beyond the congressional committees, people like everything, Walt Disney, actor Robert Taylor. And historically, you lay the foundation of how, the Cold War eventually came to an end, and Russia was defeated because you write about Ronald Reagan's early days in battling communism.
Let me make something. Go back to one thing here about Dalton Trumbull, because I've mentioned him, that he was a major communist, that he was for Hitler, that he was for North Korea, he admitted that he was a communist. He said he joined in '43, and he might as well have been a decade earlier. And then after he got out of prison, he reaffiliated with the party. And yet, even though so far as I know, he never apologized for being a communist. He never apologized for any of this stuff, and yet today, Hollywood is making a movie honoring this man. And it's going to be done. Bryan Cranston, I guess he's part of Breaking Bad. He's a big star, and I think John Goodman is supposed to be in it. And this is what, I guess, one of the relevance of my book is, for today even, is that you will be able to see, here was Hollywood, and it's going to basically lionize Dalton Trumbull, major communist, and as I said, all the things that he was for, and yet they are going to make him the hero, and then they're going after the people you're talking about, such as Roy Brewer, who was a major labor leader, John Wayne, who was part of the Motion Picture Alliance. That was the anti-communist group that you were talking about. You have my dad, Maury Riskin, and as I said, he did a number of movies, including Marx Brothers movies, and he was an anti-communist, and he and Walt Disney and Sam Wood, who was a famous director, and some labor union leaders, including Roy Brewer, eventually they formed the Motion Picture Alliance because it looked at, in 1944, as if Hollywood was controlled by the communists. And you had the Screenwriters Guild, and then you mentioned, and then there's the Conference of Studio Unions, which Ronald Reagan fought, and then, of course, you had all these various communist writers churning out all these pro-Soviet movies, pro-Stalinist movies. But as after the Hollywood, after the 1947 hearings, after the 47 hearings, which people somehow, they hate the House Committee on Activities. I mean, that's certainly the standard line today. And yet, that was very effective. And it was effective because after that, the communists were basically run out of Hollywood. In fact, the Screenwriters Guild was no longer in control. They had an election. They booted out the communists. Dalton Trumbull and Gordon Conn were no longer running its major publication. The Conference of Studio Unions, which Ronald Reagan had fought, was on its last legs. And actually, Hollywood was now beginning to make anti-communist pictures. And I'd say it's due to the House Committee on Activities, people like my dad, people like Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, who was really a star in actually preventing the Screen Actors Guild, this is sort of getting into the weeds, but from the Screen Actors Guild supporting the Conference of Studio Unions. And he was key to that, because if the Screen Actors Guild had supported the Conference of Studio Unions in one of its major strikes, it would have been a major aid to that organization, which was controlled by communists. And Sterling Hayden, he was a communist in 46, and he outlines a lot of this about how the communists tried to lure Reagan into actually supporting the Conference of Studio Unions. Then he is asked, well, what happened? He said, well, it didn't work. Reagan was terrific, and he said, we ran into a one-man battalion, and that was Ronald Reagan. And that's how the Conference of Studio Unions actually was defeated in 1946.
We have to wrap up here, but I always like to say that history is fun because time brings about it irony. And there came a point in time in the early 70s when Jack Warner, who was one of the fighters against communism as a studio head, actually worked with actor Howard De Silva, who was admitted a communist and put on the blacklist when Jack Warner produced 1776 and Howard De Silva played Ben Franklin in that movie.
Well, that's a good, interesting point. And here's something also about the blacklist, Nan, is that, though I don't know enough about what you're, I mean, I'm aware of what you're talking about, I really haven't studied it. But here is something also about the blacklist. The point about the blacklist, which people don't understand today, they think, well, what happened was that, you know, innocent people were being all, you know, couldn't work in Hollywood, and people were, there were false allegations against them, and they couldn't work in Hollywood, and therefore there was this terrible blacklist, it was unfair, et cetera, et cetera. Well, certainly not the people I'm talking about that I go into. I mean, every single one of them was a hardcore communist and had Communist Party cards, and as I pointed out before, was allegiance to the Soviet Union. But here's something of interest to me, is that anybody, almost anybody in Hollywood who had been a communist and who was dedicated to and had been a longtime communist, all they had to do, I mean, all what the producer said is, well, after the 47 hearings, they said, well, you can't work in Hollywood if you're a communist. That's all basically all they said. That was beginning of the blacklist. But anybody, all they had to do was renounce the Soviet Union, renounce Stalin, basically, and the Soviet Union, and their allegiance to the and their membership in the party, and they could all come back in and work in Hollywood. And that's what happened. I mean, many, many of these people, I mean, Robert Rawson, I know his daughter was a went to my school a couple of years behind me. I know her pretty well. And he was a bit major communist. He turned against the communists, and he gets a job. Edward Dimitri, he was part of the Hollywood Ten. I met Dimitri. He was the only one actually to turn his back on the communists. And but he got to work back in Hollywood again. In fact, you basically anybody who just renounced communism, and the point to remember, of course, in 1947, is that everybody understood that Stalin was our enemy at the time. It wasn't like you could say, well, we didn't know, it wasn't clear, and all of this. It was totally clear. They were our enemy. Stalin was his enemy. He actually made the United States his number one enemy. I mean, he formally did that, and through the Comintern, and then through the Common Form. And we all know what Stalin was doing in Eastern Europe. He conquered Eastern Europe militarily, and then he was threatening Western Europe. And the United States was doing everything it could not to attack the Soviet Union, but to just defend those countries that had not actually been conquered by Stalin. And the thing is that these people in Hollywood, the people I'm talking about, the screenwriters, the Lillian Hellmans and the Dalton Trumbos and all of these people, they were working on Stalin's behalf. They wanted, and Donald Ogden Stewart, as I mentioned before here, is he said that he actually favored, he mentions in his book that he actually wanted Stalin to conquer Eastern Europe. He says that in his book.
Book again is Hollywood Traitors, Blacklisted Screenwriters, Agents of Stalin, Allies of Hitler. Well, obviously being a book of history in light of what we're facing today in the war on terrorism, gives you a lesson of a means, opportunities, and the risks that intelligent infiltration is what I'll call it, and what the communists did back in the day, what it presents and what it threatens to American society. So lessons of yesterday can prove to be valuable for today as well. And Alan, he's as well editor-at-large for Human Events, which on the web at humanevents.com. Alan, thanks so much for how you remind us of the risks that enemies present, how to battle back against them, how to win and succeed, and how time actually does bring about the balance that we all hope for and the solutions that we all look for. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you very much.